Now, the foregoing account of wisdom has been progressive. In other words, it's been an account in terms of more and more advanced stages of penetration into reality. But there's another teaching, there's another tradition, which unfolds, as it were, simultaneously, different aspects, various aspects, various dimensions, if you like, of wisdom. And this is the teaching of what are known as the five jnanas, the five knowledges, or the five wisdoms. And we'll conclude with an account of these wisdoms. These will give us further insight, perhaps, into the nature of wisdom, prajna, with a capital W. First, what is known as the knowledge or wisdom of the Dharma Dhatu. Knowledge or wisdom of the Dharma Dhatu, and this is the basic wisdom, of which the other four are subsidiary aspects or special aspects. Now, the term Dharma Dhatu is a rather difficult one. Dhatu means a sort of sphere, it means a realm or a field, if you like. And here it represents the whole cosmos, the whole universe. Dharma here means reality, truth, the ultimate. So the Dharma Dhatu means the universe, the whole cosmos, considered as the sphere of the manifestation of reality. Or Dharma Dhatu means the universe, or the cosmos, conceived of as fully pervaded by reality. Just as the comparison goes, the whole of space is filled with, permeated by the sun's beams, the sun's rays. In the same way, the whole of existence, the whole cosmos, the whole universe, with all its galactic systems, its suns and its worlds, and its races and its gods and its men, they're all pervaded, or it is all pervaded by reality itself as a sort of field for the manifestation of reality, for the play, if you like, the expression, the exuberance of reality. So that wisdom of the Dharma Dhatu means knowledge of, direct knowledge, experience of, the whole cosmos as pervaded by, non-different from reality. Not that the cosmos is wiped out, not that it's obliterated. You see it still, it's still all there. The houses and the trees, the fields, the men and the women, the sun and the moon and the stars, they're all there, just as they were before. But now, they are pervaded by, permeated by reality. And you see both at the same time. One doesn't obstruct the other. You see the cosmos, you see reality. You see reality, you see the cosmos. Cosmos is reality, reality is cosmos. Rupa is shunyata, shunyata is rupa. One doesn't obstruct the other. They interpenetrate. And this is the Dharma Dhatu. And knowledge of this is knowledge or wisdom of the Dharma Dhatu. And this knowledge or wisdom of the Dharma Dhatu is symbolized by the figure of Vairochana, the illuminator. The illuminator like the sun Buddha, as he's sometimes called, or the white Buddha, as he's more usually described. Then, secondly, the mirror-like wisdom. The wisdom which is like a mirror. Because the enlightened mind sees everything. The enlightened mind understands the true nature of everything. It reflects everything. Just as the mirror reflects all objects. In this way, the enlightened mind reflects everything. If you look into the depths of the enlightened mind, you see everything, just as Sujana in his pilgrimage, when he reached the Vairochana's tower in South India, when he walked inside, what did he see? He saw the whole universe, the whole cosmos mirrored, because Vairochana's tower symbolized the bodhicitta, the enlightened mind itself. So the enlightened mind reflects all the objects of the world. Everything that exists, they're all reflected in the depths of the enlightened mind. But the enlightened mind is not affected by them. They don't stick. If you take a mirror and you place an object in front of it, the object is reflected. You take that object away, put another in front of the mirror reflects that. Or you move the mirror. You don't find the reflection sticking. When you move the mirror, you move the object. So the enlightened mind is just like that. Nothing sticks. It reflects, but nothing sticks. Whereas our mind, of course, is quite different. If you pursue the illustration, you may say that our mind is sort of mirror where all the reflections stick. Not only stick, but they sort of congeal and they get all jammed up together. Huh? And sometimes the mirror sticks to the object and you can't separate them. Huh? So in other words, in the enlightened mind, there's no subjective reaction, no subjective attachment. There's pure, perfect objectivity. Just like a mirror reflecting everything that exists. So this is the mirror-like wisdom, which sees everything, knows everything, understands everything, but doesn't stick, doesn't stop anywhere. And this mirror-like wisdom is symbolized by Akshobhya, the imperturbable, the dark blue Buddha. Thirdly, the wisdom of equality or sameness. The enlightened mind sees everything with complete objectivity. There's no reaction, there's no sticking. The enlightened mind sees the same reality in all, the same shunyata in all, equally. So the enlightened mind has the same attitude towards all. Right? It sees that a man is a man and a woman is a woman, a flower is a flower, a tree is a tree, a house is a house, a cathedral is a cathedral, the sun is the sun and the moon is the moon. It sees all that, but it sees at the same time the same, the common reality in all. Right? So it has a common attitude towards all. It's equal. It's equal-minded. The enlightened mind is equal-minded towards all. There's the same love, the same compassion for all, without any distinction, without any discrimination. Sometimes it's said that the love and the compassion of the enlightened mind fall without discrimination on all beings, on all objects, on all things, just like the sun's rays falling, now on the golden roofs of a palace and now on a dunghill. But it's the same sun. It doesn't mind whether it gilds the gilded roof of the palace or the dung heap. It's the same. It shines alike. So the enlightened mind is just like that, shining in the same way with its love and its compassion on high and low, so-called good and so-called bad. And this wisdom of equality or sameness, which is the same, which is even towards all, is symbolized by Ratnasambhava, the jewel-born, the yellow Buddha. Fourthly, the all-distinguishing wisdom. The mirror we've seen reflects all things equally, but at the same time we've seen it doesn't confuse or blur their distinctive features. The mirror will reflect the tiniest detail. It'll be clear and distinct in the mirror. So this is very important. And it means that the enlightened mind doesn't see things only in their unity or only in their diversity. It sees both together. The enlightened mind, especially under its aspect of the all-distinguishing wisdom, doesn't only see the unity of things, it sees the differences of things, the uniqueness of things, and it sees both of these together. It doesn't reduce the plurality to a unity. It doesn't reduce the unity to a plurality. It sees the unity and the plurality, the unity and the difference. So that Buddhism, on the philosophical level, intellectually speaking, is neither a monism, in which all differences are cancelled out, neither is it a pluralism, in which all unity disappears. It's neither monistic nor pluralistic. In the Buddhist vision of existence, the Buddhist vision of life, of reality, unity does not obliterate difference. Difference does not obliterate unity. We can't help perceiving now one nor the other, but the enlightened mind sees unity and difference at one and the same time. It sees that you are all ineffaceably, uniquely yourselves. At the same time, it sees that you are all one, and the one does not obstruct the other. You are one at the same time that you are yourselves individually, and at the same time that you are yourselves individually, blossoming with all your idiosyncrasies, at the same time you are all one. And these two, the unity and the difference, the monism and the pluralism, these are not two different things. We don't say that they're one, mind you, but they're not two. And this all-discriminating wisdom is symbolized by Amitabha, the infinite light, the red Buddha. Fifthly and lastly, the all-performing wisdom, the enlightened mind devotes itself to the welfare of all living beings, and in so doing it devises many skillful means of helping people, as they're called. And it does all this, it devises these skillful means, it helps living beings naturally and spontaneously. We mustn't imagine the bodhisattva or the enlightened mind as sort of sitting down one morning thinking, well, how can I go and help someone today? Huh? Let's think. Maybe I'll go and help so-and-so today. Huh? The enlightened mind doesn't function like that. It just functions freely, spontaneously, naturally. That helpfulness sort of pours forth in a flood, but quite spontaneously, without any premeditation, without any intellectual working things out, weighing the pros and cons and thinking, well, is this person more in need of help or that, and trying to strike a sort of balance. So this all-performing wisdom is symbolized by a Amoghasiddhi, the infallible success, the green Buddha.